Well, good morning. Today is March 1st, 2018, and we are at the home of Ann and Dan Swift. And Ann is here with me today, and she is honoring us with her life story here, and we appreciate her doing that. And the part that will go into the UAF archives and possibly a book here for Raven's Landing. We'll start with a little biological information. Can you tell us where and when you were born?
I was born May 30th, 1933 in New York City.
Oh.
Just, it's odd to be there because I've never lived there. I always say I was born there just because that's where my mother was.
At the time.
Huh? At the time, uh-huh. Yes. My parents soon moved, and I really grew up in Madison, Wisconsin.
Oh well, goodness. And so you say you grew up in Madison.
Mm-hmm.
Now tell us a little bit about that.
Well,
about your family. And
we probably moved there when I was about three. I was the oldest, and I had a brother who was a little over a year younger than me. And I don't remember anything prior to Madison. We lived in New York. My parents lived in New York, or outside of New York City and outside of Baltimore, but then they moved to Madison. So that's all I remember.
Why did they move to Madison?
Well, my mother had been a social worker, and she got her social work degree in college in California, University of California, before they even had a social work degree.
Wow.
It was called social economics, and she definitely was a social. My dad, who was older than her, had a hard time settling onto anything, partly because he was born in the previous century, and things
yeah,
were different then.
Right.
I mean, two centuries ago now, he was born in the late 1800s.
Wow.
And so he finally decided he would go into social work, and he was studying in New York. It was called the New York School of Social Work. Mm-hmm. My mother said now it's part of Columbia University.
Mm-hmm.
And she was, meanwhile, working in New York City. Of course, this was the depths of the Depression.
Sure.
And she had a good job, sort of. I think she was kind of hiring social workers for a big agency. And so then after he graduated, after I was born and he graduated, he started working as a social worker. And he... his first job was in Baltimore, and then he got a job in Madison, which was wonderful for him because he had grown up in Wisconsin. I was born in Oshkosh. So
he was born in Oshkosh?
Yeah. So he was glad to come back home, yes.
Oh, that's great.
And I had one set of grandparents that I knew. I never knew my mother's parents because they died of things people don't die of anymore,
mm-hmm.
long before I was born. But I did get to know my father's parents, which was very nice.
So do you have any stories about your parents, or it says here, your ancestors, or anybody preceding
Well,
you?
My, as I said, my father's parents were a very simple family. They were from Oshkosh. We're, on my father's side, were descended from the Mayflower, actually.
Wow.
Whereas my mother's parents were, her mother was an immigrant from Sweden, and her father was first generation America from Germany. So it was quite a different background. I really wish I had known her parents, especially her father, because her half-brother was just a wonderful person, and his son. They're
uh-huh.
both very funny, and I'm sure her dad would have been interesting to know. But
uh-huh.
They died before she graduated from high school.
Oh,
so
that's too bad.
Yeah. But my grandmother, I thought I was very happy with one grandmother and one grandfather. My grandmother was plump,
uh-huh.
and I thought that's how grandmothers should be. She had a nice lap,
uh-huh.
and she loved to tell stories about her childhood.
Uh-huh.
She was the oldest of six children, and she outlived them all. She lived to be 95, and she loved to talk about her youth, and
uh-huh.
she used these old-fashioned expressions like, oh, shaw.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my grandma always said that, too. You don't hear that anymore, do you?
No. So she was delightful, and because we were in the same state, we saw them several times a year, and that was nice.
And so your dad worked as a social worker
in
Madison?
Yeah, in Madison,
then
yeah.
What did your mom do?
Well, she
stay home with you guys?
Yeah, unhappily. When she had a hard time, because she had been a professional person
right.
so early in life, she had a very hard time. She always tells the story, and she couldn't nurse, you know, so she had to have bottles. And she always tells a story that my dad came home and she was crying into the formula when I was a baby. And so he said, "That's it. You're going to have some time. I'm going to hire someone to come in a half day a week so you can go out and do things. You don't have to stay home with a baby." So she did, and I think that persisted all the way through our childhood. I mean, our young childhood, mm-hmm. because I can be in Baltimore. I think we probably had a black caregiver, mm-hmm. because there was this little song or verse that my brother and I always sang, said to each other, "Looky, looky, here comes Cookie walking down the street. Looky, looky, here comes Cookie. Ma, but ain't she sweet?" And I always thought it was a nursery rhyme that everybody knew, and later I found out, no, it wasn't. So I think it was a caregiver in Maryland that had said that to us.
Oh, that's a sweet story, isn't it? And you still remember it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was sort of imprinted on us.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
So can you tell us about what brought you to Alaska?
Dan, my husband.
Uh-huh.
I was sort of dead to the world as far as coming. He was working actually with some people from the Geophysical Institute here. He was working we were living in Massachusetts, and he had a job at a private company and was made connections with people in Alaska.
Where did you meet Dan?
In Boston.
How did you get to Boston? We missed a little step there.
Oh, well, I've done various different things. We haven't got to the career part yet. So, we actually met in the Unitarian Church in Boston, which had started a singles club before singles clubs were things. Mm-hmm. But they said, you know, most churches have couples clubs, but because we're in a city, we don't have very many couples, so they started a singles club. And that's where I met Dan.
Uh-huh. And so he was working.
He was working in, he grew up in Massachusetts. So
okay.
It was, you know, he happened to be working at a private company kind of outside Boston, well, quite a ways outside Boston. So, anyway, that's where we met. Now, where were we?
Okay, well, what brought you to Alaska, Dan?
Yeah, and so anyway, he was always intrigued by the idea of coming here anyway. And so he called up just at the time the Geophysical Institute was hiring a new director. Keith Mather was just being hired. And Dan talked to him on the phone, and he decided they wanted, Dan was a physicist, doing theoretical work, and Keith said, oh, he wanted to expand into that. So there were all these phone calls, and next thing I know, we were packing up and moving to Alaska.
Wow. So regarding your career, can you tell us what led to your career, and tell us about, you know, what led you to want to pursue that course?
Well,
of life?
I had problems with that too. I was always involved in publications in high school, and so everybody assumed from fifth grade on I was writing for publications or putting out publications. Everybody assumed I would major in journalism, and I did that too. But then I decided, well, maybe I should, for some reason, well, it's a long story. Our high school paper was printed at the same place that the University of Wisconsin paper was printed. And I saw these women journalism students from the University of Wisconsin, because we had to go down there, in the old days you had to proofread there and at the printing place, and we would go, and I saw them and I thought, I don't want to be like them. Which they seemed very masculine to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, well, maybe I'll be a nurse. And so my senior year in high school, I worked a little bit at the local hospital as a nurse's aide to see if I could tolerate it, and I found that I could. So I went to the university. I desperately wanted to go away, and so did my brother. But unfortunately, and our parents couldn't afford to send us away for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But so we applied for scholarships, and both of us got the same answer. We don't give scholarships to people with a first-rate university in their hometown.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So being in a university town was our, we were stuck going there.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah. Before. Well, they don't do it anymore, but, and I, if I'd been a really good student, probably I, they would have taken me. I'm watching my grandchildren, you know, the ones that are really good don't have any problems. The ones that are good students, which is what I was, you know, it's sort of iffy. Anyway, so I went to major in nursing. When my brother came along, by that time my parents had moved outside the city of Madison. But when I started, if you lived, the dorms were full, basically. So if you lived in the city of Madison, you couldn't even live in the dorm. Mm. So that was really a downer, having
really
to live at home.
Really couldn't get away. Yeah.
That's right. But I joined a sorority where I lived one semester, and then at that time the nursing school had dormitories. So by the time I was a junior, I was in living in the dorm. But and I was always disappointed that I couldn't go away. So what happened was, then at that time, it was a 5.5 years to get a degree in nursing with a college degree, which wasn't very common. Most people graduate from hospitals. So some of us, I and some friends there, decided the last year was really sort of boring year, and we decided, and we were RNs by the time we were seniors, but we didn't have to go another year for that college degree. So some of us decided we would go someplace else for our last year, and my friends chose Colorado. I had no desire to go to Colorado, but we went there. And we worked for a year. None of us had any money, but we worked for a year. And most of us worked nights. I worked 6 nights a week and made a lot of money. And by the time I was finished, I was 21. And so I was considered a Colorado resident and could get resident tuition at the University of Colorado. So I looked at the program and I thought, you know, only took a semester longer to get a degree in journalism. And I thought, what the heck? I've always wanted that. So I wound up with a degree in nursing, but it has a couple times impeded me that my college degree, because now it's very common to get a college degree in nursing. At that time, it was rare. So I thought, what the heck? So it has held me back a little bit, not having that degree in journalism. I mean, in nursing, but it was good. I was finally away. I was at a college, starting over at a college away from home. I got in the honors program, totally unawares to me. I don't think I ever applied to it, which was taught by a lot of philosophy professors. So I took a lot of philosophy courses. I mean, tons of, you know, I had enough credits. So I just needed to get the, you know, what do you call it, English type credits. So I really enjoyed that. And I, one of the people I went with and I had an apartment over a campus bar. So it was good.
Party Central.
Yeah, right. We did party, but
it was downstairs.
It was downstairs, yes. So that was good. Then I had two things to do. And I had always wanted to go to Boston, and from the Middle West, I wanted to go to one coast or the other. I had wanted to go to Stanford to college, but since I didn't get in there, we went to Boston. And I was hoping to get a journalism job. I had a couple of good recommendations, but in those days, women would not allow women in the newsroom. So women were relegated to only doing the society pages, and if you're not from there, you can't really do the society pages. So I looked around. So I went back to nursing, and I worked for about a year at Massachusetts General Hospital. We were living right close to that. And I was unhappy about the way they ran things. I was working on a neurological and neuromedical floor, and we had a lot of patients in comas, and the only way to see how they were doing was check their blood pressure. So we had the blood pressure sheets on the wall in the room, and some of the nurses' aides just didn't, if they got a wrong blood pressure, they thought it was themselves. They weren't trained, in other words. Mm-hmm. And so they'd write, and I thought it was just, I should backtrack. At the hospital I worked at in Colorado, I worked at Denver Children's Hospital, and they trained their nurses' aides up the gazoo, mm-hmm. you know. They were supposed to save a urine specimen. They saved it. They would hold it up and they'd say, now what color would you call that?
Right. Yeah.
So they were very good. And to go to a big hospital, well-known hospital, and the aides were just people they pulled in off the streets. And particularly the situation I was in, I felt someone was going to die on my watch. Not my fault, but because I...
Somebody wasn't doing their job.
Yeah, and they were so short-staffed that all I could do was give out medicines, really. Mm-hmm. I couldn't supervise much. So, anyway, I worked there for about a year, made some money, and then, I don't think it was even a year, maybe half a year. And then I started looking around for other jobs in journalism. I had one short-term job that I really didn't like, which was, I won't go into that. Anyway, that didn't last. But so then I didn't have a job and I didn't have any money, but I took a French class, I think, that was free, and I met other people and told them of my dilemma. And someone said, "Oh, the Beacon Press is looking for somebody." Well, the Beacon Press was our publishing arm of the Unitarian. It was just then the Unitarian Association. It was just about the time it was merging with the Universalists. So I kept walking up the street to find this address on Beacon Street, and by golly, it was right next to the State House.
Wow.
So I walked up there. I took the elevator, the Beacon Press, and their magazine, the Unitarian Register it was called, were on the top floor. I took the elevator, and the elevator operator said, "Oh, you have to walk from now on." So we're way up in the attic, and I walked in, and they said, "Well, we need a secretary." I had to take a typing test, so I took that. I had gone back. I had to take a typing class because in journalism we did everything on a typewriter. And it didn't matter how sloppy you were, because then you took these big black pencils. So I had gotten to be a fast, sloppy typist. So I had taken a typing class to get back to that. So that was a wonderful job. There were three women in the office. The youngest one was the editor, managing editor. The oldest one was the assistant managing editor, and I was the youngest. I was the middle age-wise one, and I forget what my title was. But the three of us worked together and just had a blast. It was when Beacon Press was just starting. They were just starting to use paperbacks in colleges. When I was in college, I had to go to the reserve room to get. But they were just starting, and we had somebody in California who would write us suggestions of books, and our job was to get the rights to publish the books in paperback. So we did that and had correspondence back and forth. There was a place in England where we got all the books, and we got to know those people because we wrote to them, you know, could we have the right paperback rights for this book or that book. And so we had it was a fun job, but the other two women with me left for other reasons, and the head of the whole place was really an alcoholic. So in the afternoon, if I had the question to ask him, I had to ask him in the morning. So yeah, he would go out and have his five martini lunch, and
that was it.
Yeah. So I would say I was tired of that. And meanwhile, the Unitarian Register at the other end of the hall. There was a girl there about my age, and she left, and so I got that job, and I did that, and then I met Dan along the way at the Unitarian Church, and then, of course, we were working for the Unitarians then, so when I got pregnant, we decided to move outside. We were living close to Boston because Dan was working outside, way outside, and I was working in Boston. So we moved to be further out, and then I didn't work after that. Mm-hmm. It was fine. We, you know, we bought a house and we're settling down. It was the biggest house we've ever had, actually.
What suburb were you living in?
It was called Boxford. It's way out, kind of not too far from, anyway, it's quite far out. Some people did work in Boston there, but it was a long commute. Mm-hmm. I think they mostly drove, and it was kind of a long mm-hmm. commute. It was easy for Dan to get there, but not for me. So mm-hmm. trying to think what it was near. Beverly wasn't too far away, if you're familiar.
Yeah.
We were inland from Beverly. Mm-hmm. So...
The next question is kind of challenging for people. Can you tell us what your fondest memories are?
I've been thinking about that since I saw that.
Uh-huh.
I really think my fondest memories were when I was raising little kids. I had three daughters, and I was fortunate in that I did not need to work, and most people didn't work. So I and some other people started the League of Women Voters. Mm-hmm. We had lots of time. Well, not lots of time, but we did have time to go to meetings, have daytime meetings. So I got to know a lot of interesting people, and I could really enjoy spending time with my kids. They went to nursery school, but...
So were they all born down there?
No, Elizabeth was born... Elizabeth was born before we left Massachusetts.
Okay.
And the other two were born in Alaska.
Okay.
Yeah.
In Fairbanks?
Yep.
In Fairbanks.
Yeah, we've never lived any place except Fairbanks in Alaska.
Those are good times, aren't they?
Yeah, they are good. They were good. I'm just thinking about that, really, because I had the intellectual stimulation
uh-huh.
from the League of Women Voters,
uh-huh.
And I could still enjoy the kids.
Well, that's, I have to say, those are some of my fondest memories, too, is raising little children. It's way fun. And can you tell us how you came to be at Raven's Landing?
Well, I was one of the people that was interested, involved in getting it going. Not very involved, but I went to all the meetings. My parents had lived in a very similar place in Madison, Wisconsin. So... it was easy for me to think, well, that's what I want to do. And, of course, we didn't have a place like this. So when I heard they were working on it, I got involved. And it was just a matter. We probably would not have moved when we did, except that we wanted to have a choice of apartments. And so we moved into the last new building.
And how long have you been here?
Let's see. It'll be 2 years... in October, I think. I should ask Dan for sure.
And how, can you tell us about your experience here since you moved in?
Oh, it's been good. About what I expected, I guess. Apartments are too small. I, you know, would like to have more room.
Mm-hmm.
But oddly enough, in this building, the one place we have room is kitchen cupboards. That's not true of the other buildings, but so you have. I've never had a kitchen with so much cupboard space.
It so, does have a lot, doesn't it?
So you wind up putting other stuff in your kitchen cupboard.
Okay.
Yeah, I've never been a great cook or enjoyed cooking very much. So not having to cook is a big plus. And they clean every other week. And so I don't have to do that either.
Pretty great.
Yes.
Pretty great. So you've had a good experience here.
Mm-hmm.
A fun and final question. What is or what was your favorite age and why?
I don't know. I've had a good life. I've had lots of favorite ages.
Uh-huh.
I should put in a plug for my parents. I had just absolutely wonderful parents. Social workers make very good parents.
Yes.
I will say that.
I'm sure they do.
But... maybe when I was in fifth grade was when I started really liking to write. And I had a wonderful fifth grade teacher who some of the kids hated her because she did all these fun things, but I really liked it. We had our own little newspaper, we wrote on spelling paper, those long pieces of spelling paper, and pasted them in this big book. We had one day a month, I think, that we didn't have that many we put out about four of these. Supposedly they were passed around the school. I don't know. But I was the first editor of that, and I loved that stuff. This teacher was one of those teachers that really liked to get kids involved. We had a little city government where we got paid paper money, you know, play money for things. And at the end of the year, I was able to buy one of the issues of the paper.
So
with
she was
my
really
money.
Kind of the key to turn you towards something you love the rest of your life.
Yeah. And she just was very involved. That was probably because it was a fun age. I'd been at the same school for 6 years by then. We just had one great class for each grade. So I knew, I had known these kids since kindergarten. Mm-hmm. And I had, by the fifth grade, some friends that I really liked, and there weren't many challenges. It was a nice little place to be. So that
place.
Probably was my favorite time. Yeah.
Well, that's a great memory, isn't it? So is there anything else you'd like to add before we conclude our interview?
Well, I've talked enough, I think. I'm pretty chatty.
Well, I have to tell you, some people are more chatty than you. I had an hour in somebody's house the other day, so... Anyway, thank you so much for your time. This was really, really a pleasure and a privilege. And we'll just be glad that this is going up to the university, where anybody who'd like to listen about your life can pull it up and listen to it.
Yeah.
So thank you for your time.
Thank you.